But we'd like to talk about this man. Hopefully, if this man permits, hopefully two Ksubas topics, one much more cheerful than the other. By the end of the month, I hope we'll be able to talk about the positive topics of the first parak, mostly the Sheva Brachos topics that surround Daf Zayin. But before that, we're continuing a topic we talked about a little bit during the Zman, and that's the opposite end of things. When, God forbid, a marriage doesn't work out so well, and also isn't even ending peacefully, so what etzas are there? So as we know, this is one of our major cultural religious challenges today, what's known colloquially as the Aguna crisis, about the situation that there are both men and women who are locked up in marriages that are not functional in any basic sense of the word, but have not been halachically ended because of a lack of cooperation from the other party. And essentially, what etzas are possible. So it's the more depressing topic before the cheerful topic. But I guess that's why they call it prenup. So before you talk about the wedding, so you talk about this subject. But hopefully it should be a fruitful discussion. So essentially, just to start discussing some basics tonight and tomorrow, there are essentially a number of topics that we'll try to talk about. We'll try to talk about the fact that there has to be willingness on the part of both parties in order to end the marriage halachically, and what that means, and then we'll talk about how you can address it if there is no such willingness, which breaks down into a number of subjects, a few of which we've touched upon during the regular Zman, a few of which we haven't gotten up to at all, so hopefully we should get a more thorough treatment over the next few weeks and then segue into marriage itself. So essentially, as you know, min haTorah, so a man can marry more than one wife according to Torah law. According to rabbinic law, especially Ashkenazi rabbinic law, that is not the case at the moment. That's how we assume. But min haTorah, a man can marry more than one wife. And min haTorah, it's possible, doesn't necessarily mean it's permitted, for him to divorce her against her will. Practically speaking, as a matter of rabbinic law, so we don't allow a man to marry more than one wife, nor do we allow her to be divorced against her will. Do we allow the husband to divorce his wife against her will? That is all known as Cherem Derbeinu Gershom, two different halves of an enactment that was put in by Rabbeinu Gershom. As Rav Schechter often explains, when we say that something's a Cherem Derbeinu Gershom, we don't necessarily mean that without the cherem it would have been mutter. We don't necessarily mean to say that for a man to divorce his wife against her will is a thing that the Torah is totally cool with. It just means that Rabbeinu Gershom decided that this was something that had to be emphasized and had to be strengthened, and therefore he enacted a cherem and gave it greater severity and greater attention. So that means, practically speaking, for a divorce to happen, you need to have two willing parties. You need to have the husband divorcing willingly, and you need to have the wife accepting the divorce willingly. And again, practically, for our intensive purposes in the modern era, either party, if they're not fully cooperative, could interfere with things. So if the husband decides that he's not going to go through with the divorce, so that puts the wife in a bad situation, which is referred to in modern usage as an aguna. You're probably familiar with the fact that in the classical halachic literature, the aguna literature, which is much, much, much more voluminous, there's extensive writings about the issue of heter agunos. Most of it is referring to a situation that's a little bit different. Most of it's referring to topics that are covered in Maseches Yevamos that are talking about a situation where a husband is missing. And we assume that he's dead, but we don't know whether or not he's dead, or we feel that we know that he's dead, but we don't know whether the halacha has sufficient proof that he's dead. So most of the literature is about how can you, under what circumstances can you allow the wife to remarry based on sufficient evidence, what is sufficient evidence halachically to declare the husband dead and to rely on the presumption that that is indeed the case. So usually when you find in the classical literature the concept of heteragunos, that's usually what we're talking about. In the modern day usage, as we know, that situation, chalila, can come up as well. For any number of reasons, most famously, it comes up in the context, let's say, of 9/11. It came up whenever there's any major disaster like that, chas v'shalom, it doesn't even have to be such an extreme situation. Certainly, it's something that happens in the modern era as well. But the usage is often also invoked for a situation where the husband is alive and well, and we may probably know where he is, but he's not willing to go through with the divorce. So in that circumstance, the wife is prevented from remarrying for that reason. And then we have to figure out, so what eitzes exist for her.
Sammy? Can the case work the opposite way for the wife as well?
Yes. I mean, can there be such a situation of an algun? Yeah. Yes, absolutely. This is an underappreciated fact. That, and this is something which we'll address, because it has major implications, and it also reflects in a couple directions on this topic. So yes, it is possible that the wife, that's what was going to be the next sentence, basically, it is possible for the wife to hold up the divorce as well. If the wife refuses to accept the get, so then the husband is essentially in a comparable position. I say that somewhat broadly because there are important differences, but he's in a somewhat comparable position because he has neither option open to him that may have been open to him under Torah law, meaning that he can't just say, you have to accept it. He can't force her to accept it, even though with Torah law that could have been possible. And he can't say, well, I don't care whether you accept it or not. I'm just going to take another wife, which also could have been possible to him under Torah law, but because of Chemer ben Gershom, so you really only would have needed one of those two options in order to move on with your life, but because they're both prohibited, so that essentially puts him in a similar boat to a woman in a comparable position. Now, of course, it's not totally the same, because, first of all, and this is something that's often emphasized in the media, and it's true, but it's, you know, it's only part of the picture, that the consequences for a husband to go forward with his life are not the same as the consequences for a woman. That if a woman would remarry or have a relationship with a man without getting a get, so then that's considered to be an act of arayus, with all the implications that that has, most notably that any children that would come out of such a relationship would unfortunately have a situation of mamzerus that would be relevant to them. And that consequence wouldn't apply to a man who would remarry under these circumstances. And another element is that it's theoretically possible that there is an avenue to work around the situation on behalf of the man, which doesn't exist on behalf of the woman. And that we'll have to get to in detail. It's a whole complicated topic, but that's the notion of heter mei rabbanim. Heter mei rabbanim, a topic we didn't get to during this month at all, but God willing, we'll get to here. Heter mei rabbanim is a method, which we'll talk about in detail, by which the signatures of 100 rabbis could be utilized to grant permission to this man to get around Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom. Now, what does that mean? That could mean either half of the equation. It may not necessarily mean both, which is an important point that we'll have to discuss. It might mean that he can divorce her against her will, and it might mean that he can marry another woman in addition to his existing wife, or it might mean both. It's very significant that it may only mean one or the other. We'll have to discuss that. And one of the major problems that we have today is that it's often misused. And therefore, that adds to the situation of crisis that we have today. It's meant for the Heter mei rabbanim is supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to be a major process. It's supposed to only be used under extreme circumstances. And is also supposed to only be invoked when the husband has put a get in escrow for the wife, so that if she is willing to accept it, then she can just accept it. So it's not meant to be a tool for the husband to be able to move on with his life and leave his wife hanging or leave his wife chained. And that is the reality of how it's sometimes used today, unfortunately, and that's one of the major cultural crises that we have today. So it's clearly got a different severity to it, so it deserves its own discussion. We'll have to go into detail about that. But some of the terminology that we'll see, or some of the concepts, do get invoked in parallel ways. So some of the concepts that are relevant to the woman are relevant to the husband as far as considering the situation. So it's not true, as it's sometimes portrayed in the media, that in Jewish divorce, the husband holds all the cards. That's not the case, and it's not meant to be the case, certainly as far as contemporary halacha is concerned. It's basically the case, really, that divorce has to be mutual, and either spouse can stop that from happening. But again, it is also admittedly true that the consequences for the husband are markedly different than they would be for the wife, and there is at least theoretically an avenue for the husband that doesn't exist for the wife, and therefore, you know, have to acknowledge that that is the difference between the two. But practically speaking, the way Chazal have understood it, and certainly within halachic understanding, other than Ashkenazic halachic understanding, that essentially it is a bilateral situation, and that either spouse can interfere by refusing to agree, because both spouses have to agree for the divorce to go forward. So you could have a situation where either spouse could end up stranded, and therefore we have to explore what are the halachic avenues that exist in order to address that situation. But there are many men who have found themselves in this situation, and if they're going through it seriously, then the Heter Merubanim is not so easily available, and it's not such a simple button to push, and it's been such a source of much pain for a lot of people of both genders, and therefore we have to try to explore what exists. So basically, to say a few more Rashi Prakim, so essentially, at least as far as the husband is concerned, the get has to be given willingly. That is something that the Gemara alludes to a couple of times. There are a few places in Shas where you find it mentioned kind of in passing, that a get has to be beratzon. And a get that is not given beratzon is puzzle, that's considered to be a get ma'usa. A get to be ma'ase, somebody comes from the word osa, but if you make someone else do something grammatically, that's called you are the ma'asa rather than the osa. And a get that has been made to happen through somebody else's efforts rather than the primary principle, so that is called a get ma'usa. And a get ma'usa is puzzle. And unfortunately, that's a very big risk. That's something that we have to worry about, that bringing about a get ma'usa is pretty much worse than nothing, because that will create the appearance of permission for the woman to remarry without the halachic reality, and then unfortunately all of those consequences are going to be relevant again. So, strictly speaking, the husband has to give his wife the get of his free will. Now, however, the Gemara does say in a few places that there are times when kofinoso ad shiomerotzani, when the halacha recognizes the permissibility and the ability of Beis Din to compel the husband to give a get. So under those circumstances, the requirement for ratzon is not operative in the same way. We have to figure out exactly how that works. And therefore, a Beis Din can exert its influence to compel the husband to divorce, and such a get would be kosher. So what we have to figure out is what are those circumstances, and when those circumstances apply, so what methods count. So still, it has to be given from him, but apparently there's ways of making him do that. As we mentioned during this man, so the Rambam's comment about this is probably one of the most famous Rambams in Mishneh Torah, famous to the secular world as well, because of the frequency with which this issue is discussed in the popular media, that the Rambam says that it's the Pintel Yid, essentially, that we assume that the inner rutzon of the Jew is to do what's right, and therefore by exerting a little pressure, we're able to scare away the Yetzirah, and then what happens is the actual Ratzon coming out. So it's a topic of a lot of discussion. Of course, this is an issue, as you know, that's been the topic of headlines recently. It was a trial that was recently taking place in New Jersey, so we're familiar with this question. So we have to figure out, when is Kfiya called for? Then what types of Kfiya are acceptable? What types of Kfiya are acceptable in a society where the Jews don't really have autonomy, such as America? So what types of kfiya can be acceptable when the law is going to have a strong opinion about various methods? And what about the fact, as we'll see, that a lot of situations are subject to major machlokas, whether or not kfiya is considered to be relevant or not? So we'll discuss also that there is kind of an in-between situation, that if the wife says mois alai, an important phrase, which we spent a lot of time about during the Zman, and we'll talk about briefly probably tomorrow, that if the wife says that she finds the husband repulsive, so the Rambam's opinion is that that also is a situation where a get can be forced. And many Rishonim and later Poskim did not accept that position, but that's very relevant also to the modern discourse, because the assumption is, rightly or wrongly, as we'll discuss, that that covers almost every case, that presumably every situation where the woman wants out, she is essentially able to say, Mois alai, that I find him disgusting and I can't live with him anymore, and therefore that triggers kfiya, at least according to the Rambam. It's a debatable point. It's not really clear that Mois alai actually just covers essentially any objection that a woman could have, but some read it that way and some did not. And again, whether or not we accept the view of the Rambam is a major point of contention, but it's also a part of the discussion. So we'll have to talk about that. And it's also something that also plays a role as far as the man is concerned, because we see with Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, what if he says the same thing about his wife? To what extent does that also give him greater latitude to have the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom applied to him more loosely? That's also a major discussion. So assuming that kfiya is not an option, if the halacha does not allow kfiya, so then we have to figure out what are the circumstances that halacha does allow. What ways are there of exerting pressure that do not rise to the level of kfiya and therefore do not call the get into question? And that's a whole topic of discussion itself. And then, separate from that, if kfiya is not going to be either halachically possible or functionally possible, and methods that fall short of kfiya are also not working, so then the question is alternative routes. So we'll have to talk about the prenup. What exactly is the scope of the prenup? What are the issues associated with the prenup? And what are the mechanisms of the prenup? And then there are other suggestions that have also been floated, much of which have engendered great controversy, but sometimes have scopes of application. So, for example, mekachtos, one of the circumstances when we could say that there was not full awareness between the two parties as to what was involved with the other side, and therefore the whole marriage deserves to be annulled. That's one possible issue. What if the wedding was carried out in a halachically invalid fashion? Let's say, for example, the Edim were not kosher, or some other type of disqualification of a similar nature. How does that play in? What about the possibility of Afkeinu, the phrase that we see sometimes in the Gemara, that Afkeinu Rabbanu L'Kedusha Mineh, that sometimes the Gemara seems to be alluding to a concept that Chazal have the ability to annul a marriage without the agreement of the husband? And also, is there a concept, probably the most controversial of the concepts, and that's also discussed today, the question of get zikoy, that is there a possibility of Beis Din saying that they can give the get to the wife on behalf of the husband, and that this is considered to be a schus on his behalf, even if he's screaming, no it isn't, but that the halacha views it as a benefit to him, and therefore is that a method that could work? So we'll have to discuss all of those possibilities, and then also discuss the consequences of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. What are the issues that are relevant to a man who wants to remarry under these circumstances if he doesn't have his wife accepting a get, or worse, if he's refusing himself to give a get? How exactly does the Chaim affect him under those circumstances? So God willing, I think those are most of the topics that we'll try to cover over the next few weeks, and God willing, if we finish those and there's still them around, so then we'll try to get on to more cheerful things of Shavuot Brachos. So, any questions about that, about our introductory note? Okay, so again, I apologize.